For me, I think, as with a lot of young guys, probably struggled with things like, you know, your confidence and your ability to express yourself, and, you know, you got a load of feelings that you don't know what to do with, and going on a rugby pitch was always quite a good way of dealing with that stuff. You're listening to the England Rugby Podcast, O2 Inside Line. I'm Sam Underhill. My name's Sam Underhill. I play for Bath, Rugby and England. I play open side flanker. I'm on the side of the scrum between the forwards and the backs. Not as quick as the quick guys, not as big as the big guys, somewhere in the middle. You've got a lot of jobs, but one of them is to get as many involvements in the game as possible. We're sort of a link, like I say, between the forwards and the backs. And so doing a lot of defensive work, but doing a lot of connective work in attack and trying to put the set piece elements together with sort of phase play. I think a lot of it is about working hard and being around the ball and essentially being noticed, I guess. What was I like growing up? It's a good question. Quite an active kid, I think. Like always in school, kind of like clever, could work harder, not that academic. I wanted to get out and play sport, wanted to be active and doing stuff. I think maybe sort of introverted but sociable, if that makes sense. I was never like the massively confident kid, but I did enjoy going to, yeah, team sports, team events and doing things. Maybe mainly things that I was good at. I never really liked to get out of my comfort zone too often. I think rugby was probably the furthest I went. We moved over to Peterborough when I was like 2 or 3. So I grew up in Peterborough. They did have rugby clubs, but not loads of rugby. And then we moved to Gloucester when I was about 12 or 13. And that's where rugby's everywhere. So started playing it in school, and that's how I sort of got involved.
I'm Chris Carter. I was Sam's deputy headmaster at Sir Thomas Richards School. He was a good student, did very well in school. Of course, he excelled on the rugby field. He was absolutely outstanding. Whilst he was in the upper six at school, he made his debut for Gloucester as a 17-year-old. It was clear that Sam Underhill was going to do extremely well as a rugby player. In 40 years of being involved in schoolboy rugby, ever seen anybody tackle so hard as Sam Underhill? Yeah, that was his trademark then, and it's still his trademark now. And I thought, yeah, this guy is special. His career so far has been outstanding. I'd love to see Sam cement his position in the back row for England. I always feel that if Sam Underhill's playing, we've got a chance. When I went to watch Sam play in the final in Japan, 2019, it was a very, very proud moment, obviously, for me. I must admit, I shed some tears that night when he ran out. He's a super bloke. Credit to the sport and credit to his school, that's for sure.
So I was born in America. Dad was in the RAF, so he was over there. This is my mum, Olivia, my dad, Greg, my eldest sister, Lucy, my middle sister, Sally, and my younger sister, Rachel, and then me, the surprise edition. There's a year between each of my sisters, and then a 5-year gap, and then me. So I think they might have called it a day, and then had a nice little surprise at the end. But I think it probably worked out right, because I think Dad probably wanted a boy. I think I was about 3 when we moved back from the States, so I've got memories of it from family videos and from photos of us being there, but nothing that I actually remember. I think my sisters sort of grew up there a bit more. Obviously, they were older. I think they had American accents and, you know, they were sort of in that. They went to school there and stuff. I never had that same experience. So it was very much a case of being born there, sort of moving back very early. And I've kind of always considered myself as always having been in England. Family was quite a big thing for us. I think especially being military and like moving around, I think you do end up, you know, being more reliant on people that you know and have had long-standing relationships with, like your family. So, yeah, I think that's what ultimately led us to sort of move back to Gloucester. I think moving around definitely made us closer. Maybe not, again, consciously, but we end up, like, we all talk quite a lot. We're dotted around the place. One of my sisters in America, one of them's in Scotland, one of them's in Bristol, so not too far. But we end up, you know, coming back home for Christmases and trying to get together as much as we can. So I think not that's unusual, but I think definitely moving around and sort of being reliant on each other more than, you know, especially for the girls, because they moved more than I did, or ages where, you know, it was more sociable, had school friends they may be able to make again. And I only really moved once, essentially, from Peterborough to Gloucester. So I didn't have as much of that to put up with. But yeah, definitely made us closer in a way that is probably still sort of present. dad's a bit of a gym nut, so my sisters all did cross country. Wanted us all to do something. So I think I played football. I was a terrible footballer. When I started playing rugby, I was a little bit better at it. My friends all played. I wanted to play with my friends. I joined a club. Dad was probably pretty happy at that. I don't think we ever thought, you know, it ended up being a job. Mum and dad had four kids and they were constantly shipping us around to training. So probably a massive amount of commitment from them and a massive amount of dedication. My sisters, two of them still run, runs competitively still. I knew dad had played rugby when he was younger. I think he stopped when he was in his 30s. So I only got to see him play when he was a bit older. Probably not in his prime, maybe. I think he was about 55 when I saw him play for our local village thirds. I don't think he played a game after that. But he was a good rugby player back in the day, but he never put any pressure on any of my sisters, which probably ended up being a good thing because ultimately playing rugby and trying to play rugby was my choice. Likewise, running was the girl's choice. I did enjoy the physicality of it. That was always the main appeal for me. I think, like, as with a lot of young guys, probably struggled with things like, you know, your confidence and your ability to express yourself. And, you know, you got a load of feelings that you don't know what to do with. And going on a rugby pitch was always quite a good way of dealing with that stuff. So I think that's a big part of the motivation for me initially anyway, to start playing and being good at it. In many ways, I think you've got to enjoy that, the physical aspect, especially being a back rower or a forward in general. I think you've got to enjoy that part of the game. I got an offer out of school to play for Gloucester Academy. So I played England under 16s at school, which probably the first time I'd had a bit of, not recognition, but the first time I went, oh, I'm actually okay at this. I went into Gloucester with no real expectations, but it was, you know, it was my local club. I wanted to play for them. It was a really good experience. It was sort of, I imagine, most 18-year-old rugby players would want to be doing, being in a professional sort of Premiership academy. So yeah, I did that for a year. Didn't work out, didn't get an extension for my second year, so then I left to go to university and then kind of picked up rugby again when I moved there. So I went to Cardiff University, it was 2015. My agent that had represented me at Gloucester is from South Wales and suggested I went down to train with the Ospreys for pre-season. There was a major international tournament going on in England in 2015. So the Ospreys had lost 20 odd players to it over the sort of pre-season and early start of the season period. So yeah, I went to train with them. Again, no real expectations, but it went quite well. Ended up playing a pre-season game against Saracens for them. Ended up playing on the bench their first game of the season. Managed to get a start for their first home game of the season. It went from there. It wasn't an enormous, you know, ascendancy. It was just a sort of vacancy that I was able to fill. It was sort of a sort of opportunity meets a circumstance. Yeah, it worked really well. It was a great group of lads. It was a really good environment. It was a very down-to-earth place, but everyone worked hard and everyone was very friendly and very welcoming. It was before I'd actually started university, so I hadn't really figured out how to balance the two. So that got more difficult as time went on. Played, I think, maybe 38, 39 games for them over 2 years. In what was the Pro 12 in Europe. And then ended up getting an offer from Bath to come back over. So I ended up dropping out of university, no degree, just student debt, and then came over to Bath to play and have been there since. Leaving university was a weird decision because I'd already put the best part of a year and a half. All of my university friends will attest to the fact I was a terrible student, wasn't very academically minded, was constantly trying to, you know, get help to catch up from not being at lectures, from training. I was full-time at the Ospreys, so I didn't really have a sort of synchronised calendar. It was you play rugby and then you try and fit in university around it. I'd always wanted to play professional rugby. I'd always tell someone younger to pursue academia as well or pursue another line of work alongside it. But at the same time, I had an offer to play Premiership rugby, which was the whole point. I had a lot of help and a lot of advice from a lot of people. I'm sure I spoke to my family at length. My sister was at Cardiff University at the time as a medical student. So when I was in my second year, I think she was in her final year. So I used to go and pop over, get some laundry done and general life help from her. It all worked out quite well in the end. It was a decision of, this is what you're working towards anyway. So you have it. And yeah, I would love to have finished university, but at the same time, it wasn't for me at that moment in time. It wasn't working and so here we are. I'd met Eddie in 2016 after my first season there, and he was encouraging me to come back to England. But at the same time, I was 19 and then I think 20 when I left. So I was under no illusions that it was a, you know, a sure thing. In my head, it was quite a sort of a remote possibility, not a guarantee. The England thing was a factor in that I was sort of declaring that I want to play for England and I am English, but I wasn't expecting it in any way. In terms of what makes someone good at the physical aspect of the game, all that combative nature, I think off the pitch I'm relatively docile or fairly easygoing, and I think like everyone needs an outlet, right, to express themselves. So I think that's probably how it started, and I think the physical side of things came relatively naturally, like in terms of, you know, I've got relatively long torso, short legs, probably quite, you know, physiologically probably quite well adapted for tackling, and that sounds stupid, but most players have their thing they're good at aligns with their physical attributes. So, you know, like Ben Earl is incredibly quick, and as a result is a phenomenal ball carrier, especially when he's got a bit of space. Or like your Jack Willis of the world, who's hyper mobile and can get into some really uncomfortable positions, as a result is really good over the ball. I don't think anyone's really frightened on a rugby pitch. I don't think you have the time to be. That's part of why I love it as a sport, is that A, you've got people to look after, got teammates that you don't want to let down. B, you've got people that are looking after you, and you see people putting their bodies on the line for you. You want to do the same. And you know, it's obviously exacerbated at professional level, and it's even more so at test level, because you're representing your country. There's a million reasons emotionally, logically, that you want to do well. That togetherness as a team is quite a maybe a unique thing to rugby, and in that you need to be willing to put yourself in harm's way for a commonality and for other people. Like, for instance, as a back row, you've got your fly half outside you. You've got a guy to look after that's incredibly important to the team, or you've got, you know, guys on your inside that are working incredibly hard, scrummaging and mauling and doing all that stuff. You want to run and make tackles for them. And I think that's a big part of it for me. Everyone's got this element of risk. I don't think you can be overly concerned with your own well-being, but at the same time, that's what we train for. You know, that's why we, in terms of looking after it like your body, you get to train for a living. You know, you get to go, we're in the gym sort of 3 or 4 times a week, and you're conditioned to play the game. So we do an awful lot as well to make the game as, you know, safe as possible for ourselves. You spend hours and hours and hours on contact technique, tackle technique, carry height, carry technique, sort of all the stuff that eventually means you're less likely to sort of hurt yourself on the weekends. I think working with psychologists kind of came naturally in that the teams I was working with or playing in started using them, and then you had access to them. I think it's massively beneficial to players to sort of explore. It's probably an underrated part, an underutilized part of the game, certainly at club level. And that's mainly down to access. You've got maybe 60 guys at a club playing. You've got 30, 40 sort of staff members around the place maybe. And access to one psychologist is difficult, let alone someone that can get across an entire squad. But fortunately, yeah, working with England, for example, we had relatively small squad sizes compared to club teams, and we have psychologists that have worked with us over campaigns, and I've taken a lot of elements of what they've taught us to use and sort of apply that to game prep and in-game. And like generally the best performers, best athletes in any sport are also mentally at the top of their game.
Tackle. Scott Williams does the right thing there. He goes low, but Underhill comes from nowhere.
I'm Ben Earl. I play for Saracens and England. Sam Underhill is one of the best players I've had the opportunity to play with. I mean, defensively, he's a freak of nature. He's a very good organiser. He's a great guy. He wants the best for everyone. I consider him a good friend.
I'm Dan Cole, and I play for Leicester Tigers and England Rugby. I would describe Sam Underhill as intelligent. He's funny, but in a deeper way. And on the field, I think he's tough as nails. You watch him play, the way he throws himself, you wouldn't want to run straight at him because he will hit you hard. And he keeps putting on AC/DC, Thunderstruck, going, na 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 na, undoes. He's trying to get that chant going, so coming to a stadium near you.
Repent!
today has gone incredibly quickly, I'd say. I think I made my debut in 2017 in Argentina, and it still kind of feels like a couple of years ago. It goes so quickly, you know, that people say it to you when you're playing. Guys like Courtney or Ben Youngs say, you know, enjoy it, or said in France, you know, enjoy it, because it goes by like that. Yeah, I think it's true, especially when you look at Test Rugby campaigns. You've only got, what, 3 campaigns a year, maybe. So when you start to look at it that way, not many opportunities to be here. So yeah, it's something I'm very grateful for now, having not been in it, having missed. I think I've not done a Six Nations campaign for the best part of 4 or 5 years, like a proper campaign. So yeah, it's something I'm not taking for granted. It was disappointing not to make it to France, but at the same time, I didn't have an awful lot of expectation around it. Like, I hadn't been involved in the Six Nations. Steve had only been with the squad for a cycle. So I thought it was unlikely to be involved. So I was really happy to be involved in the training camps and really enjoyed it, thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great group, great sort of group to be a part of. And it was just, yeah, got to, I think it was Verona, and there were 10 back rows for 6 spaces. And so it was always going to be a case of someone misses out. And it's disappointing, but at the same time, you are taught to sort of deal with disappointment in healthy ways, I guess. And the best thing I could do was go back to Bath, keep training, end up playing sort of earlier than I would have done maybe. And then being called back in, again, unexpected, but didn't really have an awful lot of time to think about it. I got a call on the Saturday. I think I was out on the Sunday. I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a daunting prospect as well. Like, at the same time, I'd gone from playing Prem Cup rugby with Bath to now I'm in France in the biggest tournament there is. And I've got to sort of help the team in any way I can. And I knew the first week, Steve said, you know, just go out there. We were playing Fiji. I wasn't in the team. The second week, same sort of decision was made. I was, again, not expecting anything. That team had been together for a long time, about 20 weeks. And they'd done a phenomenal job to get to where they had. And it was, again, I was just sort of grateful to be a part of it. So when I got told I was playing, I was incredibly nervous because I'd just gone from, yeah, not having played Test rugby in a decent while to playing a very important game. But a lot of the motivation, for me anyway, was around not letting the squad down. You know, guys like Courtney, Ben, Johnny May, like those guys had done an enormous amount for English rugby, and it was the last time, to sort of last chance to send them off and to finish a tournament with a medal. When you're not involved, you then maybe appreciate it more when you are involved, and sharing that with family is something that I'd really missed. My wife came out to the first game that I wasn't playing, but it was great to have her out there and to sort of have her support. And my parents followed. You know, my mum and dad have travelled pretty much everywhere I've played, so I can't actually get rid of them. But it's really lovely. At the same time, it's something that you when you're younger, you maybe don't appreciate all the effort they go to. But now, for sure, it's something I really enjoy sharing with them. It's my parents, mum and dad are both season ticket holders at the Rec, and they're down there most weekends, even if I'm not playing. It's a cool thing to share with family and friends.
I'm Rachel, and I'm one of Sam's older sisters. Growing up with 3 older sisters, Sam always learned to really, I suppose, hold his own in a environment full of kind of strong women. We've always been really close as siblings, and I think Sam is exceptionally thoughtful to us all. He's fantastic at making sure, you know, if we're going through a hard time in life, so whether that's kind of work or personally, he's always fantastic at listening, actively listening, and really trying to kind of understand what you're going through. So he's a really empathetic person. I think family is everything. We're a very close-knit family. We have always been growing up, and like all family, we bicker, we argue, and no family is perfect. But I think ultimately, it's knowing that regardless of whatever happens, that you will always be there for each other. And Sam in particular is an extremely loyal individual. What makes me so proud to be a sister is that he's always very true to himself and true to his morals and his values. And that's regardless of, you know, how much he's managed to achieve in his sporting career. I think one of my favourite games will always be England-Wales in Twickenham, you know, many years ago when he made such an incredible tackle. And it's moments like that that you just feel so, so proud, and you know you'll remember forever.
I was meant to officiate my sister's wedding. It was in Miami in 2022. and it was meant to be fine because the Six Nations was going on, but I wasn't involved. And I got back to fitness, I think, the penultimate week of the camp. So I got called into camp, and it just completely scuppered the plans to go and A, be at the wedding, be officiate it. So I think I made the call. I said, I don't think I can officiate it because obviously I didn't think I could make it. So in the end, made it. I ended up getting called up to play France in Paris in the last game of the 22 Six Nations, and flew the very next morning on my own, flew to Heathrow, flew to, yeah, Miami, did the wedding, and then flew. But it was very unglamorous. Flew back on Thursday and played Sail Sharks at the Wreck on the Saturday, I think it was. It was a different week, you know. Rugby is one of those things you don't get to go to a lot of family events, or you miss being able to commit to go to things like weddings or birthdays or whatever the occasion is. So it was incredible. I managed to get to it, and it was an incredible day. But I didn't officiate, which I was kind of glad of. I've never done a wedding, and I think I need to see a few more before I do. Coming up next on the England Rugby Podcast, O2 Inside Line.
It's supposed to be one of the biggest achievements in your life, and then to perform the way we did, it's incredibly tough. I thought that was my career done after 2015. I thought I'm rubbish, as the results showed. And so I remember getting a voicemail basically saying, you're going to play in the Six Nations, you need to lose some weight, get better, but you're going to be playing.